sample copies here for all concerned.
Senator, is that the wording that talks about continuously maintain the domicile?
No, it isn't, Mr. Chairman. It's our, in addition, and let me pass these out so you can follow me if I may. In addition to the bill, are on line 16, if I may get ahead of myself a little bit, since we've already got it out before us now. I made that period at the end of 2 years, at the end of years, that period a comma, and put provided that only one exemption may be claimed by a married couple filing jointly or separately. In other words, if it's separately, it would be $5,000 rather than $10,000. Otherwise, it'd be $20,000, and I think that's...
Senator Ferencamp, did you have a question?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, there's so many of these bills these days, and so many of the restrictions on older people who, after you get through with them, or encouraging or practically forcing them to go against what they hold to be their really moral position in life. I'm just hoping that this amendment is not going to be another one of those that cause our elderly to keep from getting married when they truly want to because they can't afford to financially. Has this been thought through very carefully, Senator?
I would think there might be a further problem there, and that would be that possibly it might be considered discriminatory in some manner. I don't know. That's something we probably want to get an opinion.
Excuse me, sir.
How are you?
If two people were living together and were not married, they would be able to claim the $20,000, and two people that were married would not be able to claim it. So I think we're just compounding an already serious problem within the elderly community.
Mr. Chairman, I may respond to that, and that's a very good comment. And we are experiencing some of that very thing today. And that I know quite a few people that have been married, good, reputable, upstanding, morally straight individuals, that had difficulty in making it on one Social Security. And they have gotten a divorce at their late age in life, which I think is a shame. And still live together, cohabitating. They've really morally, in the eyes of God, always been married and still are. But they've been contributing both, you know, to Social Security for these many years that they both worked, but they only get one. But you can get a divorce and you can get two and still cohabitate. So we're doing it already, and I can name you quite a few in my district that are doing it. Now, some refuse to do it, and I admire them for, you know, their integrity and their moral attitude towards such. But I've discussed this with several people in our administration, and I don't know of any way around it. And it's not fair. A lot of injustice. We don't have any way of straightening out the federal law, since we're a state, to prevent this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then we thought that $20,000 would be excessive.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that $20,000 would have a very, very distinct impact on the income of the state.
I was looking at the age 65. Is there any reason that we have it 65? Couldn't it be 62 or another figure?
It could, Senator, Mr. Chairman, through the chairman to Senator Ferguson, it could be 62 or 3, but you know, if I may mention some names of our mutual friends, you know, I've talked to Butrovich and Clem, our current president, quite a few times, and they're old standbys for, you know, the longevity bonus and so on. And, you know, they never would go along with changing the requirements. 25, or in fact, I had difficulty even getting our illustrious president to go along with 35 years. That's 10 more years if you have no lapse of time outside of state more than 2 years. A few people have had to go to the lower 48 when their parents were, you know, elderly and disabled to take care of them a couple of years, and then they came back where they wanted to stay all the while, but due to circumstances beyond their control and their family obligations, they had to go out of the state, maybe to settle in the state and a few other things. There's been a lot of requests to do this with a longevity bonus. Well, I haven't got that approval yet.
Well, this might be a step in the right direction, Senator Bradley. If one were to put the age of 62 on there, it might have the effect of getting people to retire earlier and providing for upward mobility of younger people, which apparently has been a very detrimental effect of the activity in the Congress, where they're encouraging people, or, you know, telling them to work longer. And they're very definitely two sides to look at.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right. And I would certainly concur with that. I was just thinking of one other thing, and that is, do you think we could get it to the legislature if we change it? Since 65 has been that old age that nobody wants to change, you know. If you thought we could,
do
you want to try to throw an amendment on the floor or throw it in there and maybe change it later?
If the chair would entertain a motion, I'd move that we change the age to 62 years.
Discussion on the motion?
I concur, Mr. Chairman.
No objection. We will add that amendment. Does anyone have any feelings on the amendment that Senator Bradley has suggested on line 16?
Mr. Chairman, I hope I've explained that adequately. We already have that. I think you went out there doing part of that explanation.
I've got two committees going on at one time, Mr. Senator.
I
don't mean to be.
Let me repeat it real quick, if I may.
No, I think I got it.
Did you get my?
Yeah.
Did you get my son? Okay. That's federal, and there's nothing we can do about it. Wish we could. We've got a bad situation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I have a little more some justification for doing this at all.
All right, later.
Now, when Mr. Jenkins gets here, I was hoping he would explain that, and I think our good friend Dove Cole also has some additional information. I just had it explained to me in some detail about an hour ago, but I've had it in generalities from my constituents for a long time, and that's concerning Social Security. So I won't go into that right now, but if the right people don't show up, I'll attempt to explain it. The fact that it isn't what it used to be, and it's hurting a lot of senior citizens. And one other thing I'd like to add is the consumer price indexes for Anchorage and nationwide for the past 5 years are as follows, and I got these statistics recently. Now, from 72 to 73, it was 5.9 for Anchorage and nationwide, 7.9%. And 73 to 74, it was 13.1% for Anchorage and 12% for nationwide. And 74 to 75, it was much higher for Anchorage, 12.4 and only 7.6 nationwide. 75 to 76, 7.6 against nationwide, 5.3. 76, 77, a little bit lower, 5.7 to 6.5. But this past year, it went all the way up to 11.5%, much higher, as opposed to nationwide, 8.9. And I'd like to explain also, to give both sides, currently, in addition to all other exemptions that affect all of us, the first three of these that I mentioned are for the benefit of elderly, and that is a 2.4% tax credit for our elderly in accordance with applicable income. In other words, the effective rate of an elderly person's adjusted gross income is shown on the IRS form 1040, is 2.4% if their annual adjusted gross income is less than $8,750. Well, $8,750, that's not much money. So if you make less than $8,750, you get that 4.2%. If it's more than, if it's $8,750 or more, is not applicable. So that doesn't help a lot of them. So I just thought I'd bring that in. So I think we'd just about discard that, because nobody gets more income than that from Social Security otherwise, and pretty bad shape. But another one that has been recently enacted, you know, for elderly only, is a $100,000 capital gain exemption from the sale of a residence. Now that's quite a benefit to some of our senior citizens, and I think it's one that's justified. And of course, we have $150 Alaska longevity bonus. Now, Florida, the state of Florida, still has more benefits for the elderly, and that's a great retirement state, you know, than we do. They don't have a longevity bonus, no other state does. So we have that over them, but they have many other advantages over our citizens, and we have the highest cost of living of any state in the union. I just thought I'd bring all of that in. And I'll be willing to answer any questions. So a lot of people say, well, we've got enough benefits for our senior citizens. But when you really water it down and evaluate it and analyze it to what, you know, an average person that can, you know, get enough to really live a half decent standard of living, they don't have much but the longevity bonus. tax exemption on a home, you know, from property tax, which is a help. How many of them own homes even? Or I know a lot in Anchorage that certainly don't own homes. They live in apartments.
We do have, however, a fairly generous treatment of old-timers in this state.
Better than a lot.
Darn
yes.
Right. Yep.
But you know, your golden towers, you've got to have a little income to live in those things. They're rather expensive.
Well, the majority of that's underwritten by federal funds.
But what about those with income?
The ones with income, and maybe Dan can speak as to the numbers connected with that, but for about $250 a month.
As if you're on public assistance, golden towers goes up to $480 a month.
Right, but you know, you wouldn't have to have near that much yourself, mm-hmm. because there's a very generous federal
yes.
floor
and,
that comes in under that.
And Chena View in Anchorage, you know, but you're penalized because you've worked, lived frugally, and saved and accumulated something. And I resent that. If Elmer Rasmussen, chairman of the board of the biggest bank in the state, and Bob Atwood, the publisher of the largest newspaper in the state, get the Alaska longevity bonus, and why shouldn't they? They satisfy all the requirements. They're going to have to pay tax on it anyway, so they just give away a little bit more. We get it back one way or the other.
Yeah, that's true. But on the other hand, it's very easy to discourage frugality by providing too much at the end of the run, where people just say, "Well, why should I worry? They're going to take care of me anyway." And you know, I have a real fear about going too far in this thing.
Yes,
what
do you do? You know, on this bill, it was recommended that we say let's make this applicable to those who make only so much annually. I said I can't quite buy that, and I discussed that with a lot of senior citizens in Anchorage at one of them meetings. And they disagree too, because we've got them in all, you know, categories of income there. And the majority disagreed with that. Either you're eligible or you're not eligible, and income shouldn't have anything to do with it. Maybe everybody doesn't agree
with that. I think we ought to take a look at the income level there. Very definitely. Anyway, thank you, Senator Brad.
Right.
Mr. Paul.
Yes.
Signed up to testify. Would you? Take that seat if you would, Doug. Our microphone is
all
having
right.
problems up here, and your voice is kind of soft.
Thank you. Chairman Hackney and Senators, I am Doug M. Call, a social worker who has worked 8 years for the state, 8 years for a private agency, Homemaker Home Health Aid Service, and 2 years for the hospital, the USPHS in Cottsville. I have knowledge of the living conditions of the older people throughout Alaska. I've also traveled on the Aleutian Chain. I think that it's very important to the mental health of older people not to be constantly afraid of how they're going to live in their old age. And we're living longer. They think they may help us to live to be 150. I don't know how many of us want to live that long, but I am programmed to live to be 112 myself. And I'd like to live the rest of my years in Alaska because I like Alaska. I enjoy Alaska, even when it's cold and windy as it was today. As I told Senator Bradley recently, I think that he was hovering over and heard us. I had a group in my home for lunch, and this was what we talked about. Was having, and I hadn't talked to Senator Bradley until today about this, 10,000 exemption. Now, I think we were considering a senior citizen of 65, and that this should be for people over 65, but one of the things that we discussed also was if we could, say, have the same eligibility as for the Pioneer Homes, that is 15 years residence and age 65. This would help us, knowing that 10,000 of our income would be exempt. It would help to lift some of the fears that we have of growing older and living to be 100. And there are a number of our older people who have lived beyond 100 years here in Alaska, despite the fact that it is a pretty hard climate to live in. I'd like you to consider keeping it at 65, but lowering the residence to the same as the Pioneer Home, which is 15 years.
Okay. Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
And were you other ladies, did you want to testify? Or
no,
okay, thank you. Mr. Jenkins, do you honor us with your monetary expertise, as I believe the expression goes?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Gary Jenkins, Director of the Audit Division, Department of Revenue. And I believe you have the comments that I provided to you on Senate Bill 41. And just to very briefly restate them, as I noted initially, the way the bill is drafted, I wasn't sure of what the intent was on the part of the author, but it would appear to, in a situation where you had a husband and wife, both age 65 or over, filing a joint return, actually exempt up to $20,000 of income, because they would both be allowed a $10,000 exemption. And I see I have an amendment, so let's just solve that problem. Senator Bradley has already touched in his testimony and some of the other benefits that I pointed out in my memo of the elderly credit, which I quickly acknowledge is a very limited credit, but does apply in some cases. The $100,000 capital gain exemption, and the longevity bonus. A couple of the points which perhaps the Senator touched on before I came in was that the state of Alaska does currently totally exempt any qualified pensions and annuities which a person 65 and older might receive. So any kind of annuity or pension that is of a qualified nature by the code would be exempt already. And then lastly, I noted that with the $100 individual tax credit, a married couple filing jointly would actually be able to exempt up to $12,500 of gross income just under the current rules that exist, also of taxable income.
What would be your reaction to changing this from age 65 to age 62 as we just did by amendment?
I guess I would have no reaction, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, you're really dealing in a policy issue. I can't even react as far as a fiscal reaction because we don't have sufficient statistical information to tell you what the effect of that might be. With the requirement, if the requirement is remaining the same, that a person maintain domicile for 25 or more years or 35 intermittently, I'm not sure how many additional people that's going to add. I would suspicion it's probably a fairly small number, but it would add some additional individuals.
That's what's always puzzled me about the fiscal notes that come out of from the finance people, the revenue people. There very definitely is an impact on the state treasury. You're not collecting that number of bucks.
That is correct.
Although there's an amelioration of that impact due to the fact that those bucks are available and are spent in the economy, so you pick them up in other ways. But it surprises me that you can't come up with some way to quantify that so that we can get some kind of handle on how many bucks we might be talking about. I'd be very interested in that. Yeah. In the loss of revenue. I realize the other is a very elusive figure, but all kinds of figures float around, like when money changes hands in a community. They say, well, it changes hands and has an impact of maybe 5 times or 7 times or whatever.
I usually, Mr. Chairman, am willing to make some sort of a guess on any of these, and most of the fiscal notes I prepare, I will always make a stab in the dark as to what I think the fiscal impact potentially could be, making some assumptions. The problem with this type of a bill is there are just so many variables that come into play, and we have so little information that I just no way I can say it's going to be $100,000 or $1 million or anything of that nature, because for example it was suggested, well, we could go get a list of people that are getting the longevity bonus and maybe work it from that, but a lot of those people may or may not have out of their income requiring them to file a return, and if they do file a return, it could be that the income is all non-taxable already and they're just getting a refund back. And so we have just a whole host of variables in there that I sat down and went through it every way I could and just couldn't come up with what I could feel was any kind of a defensible basis for saying that's going to be at least an estimate of what the impact might be.
Was that done, though, in conjunction perhaps with Mr. Plotnick's office? What figures were you working with?
Well, just basically, I just looked at all the variables that would come into play in a return that would be filed by a person age 65 and older. and especially, again, bringing into the consideration whether or not they met the other requirements of 25 years, 35 intermittent years, which we have zero, you know, background on, anyhow, to my knowledge.
Again, it would seem to me that between Mr. Platnick's office and Vern Perry's office, there ought to be a way to get at least halfway justifiable figures. And I'd like to suggest that perhaps you get together.
Okay,
with
Dan's got some information. I was unaware of it. I'll have to admit that.
What I would ask of you right now, that assuming this bill were to pass out of committee, it will go to Finance Committee. That's the second referral. And I think we would ask that you try and put some figures together that would at least give us something to hang our hats on.
Okay.
In talking with these other two officers.
The bill goes to Judiciary, is what it shows here. We have to ask for it to go to Finance.
You're right. You're right. I think that was a miscue, really. I think that should have been Finance. And it would be my intention to ask Judiciary to waive and let it go on to Finance. I see no judicial implications here at all. Mr. Plotnick, did you have some information, or are you just...
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
If you would, please.
Yeah.
Stay there, Gary, if you'd like.
Senator Hackney from Ferguson, I apologize for missing part of Gary's testimony. The Office on Aging did coordinate with the Department of Administration, and as of last month, the end of January, Mr. Perry sent out 6,886 checks. This represents out of a total of approximately 10,000 Alaskans who were 65 and over. We didn't compute it at 62 because we didn't know what that amendment was going to be. Well, 6,886 were the number of checks sent out. There's approximately between 7,200 and 7,300 persons on the rolls of the Alaska Longevity Bonus. And the discrepancy is that a lot of ALB recipients either go outside for a short time, or they're in hospitals, or one thing or the other, outside, so they disqualify themselves for that period of time. I can sympathize with my colleague Gary here, but we're using an estimated figure of 10,000 Alaskans who are 65 and over. And until we have a 70-80 census, which we'll let Uncle pay for, we really just don't know how many elderly they are on the chain and elsewhere in the state. But we know that there are 6,886 checks delivered as of last month. So we've done that basic, very simplistic method of determining there are 2,700 other Alaskans out there who are not eligible for longevity bonus because of residency requirements. So that's the only tidbit of information that we have been able to come up with. Now, the Office on Aging, of course, works with persons 60 and over. And that's not only by federal law, it's state law, which you enacted 4 years ago with multi-purpose senior centers. We've identified 60 and over as those persons to take advantage of the senior center activities. That's the extent of a prepared testimony, because I did check with the Department of Revenue and knew their position on the bill, and I merely came over to lend technical assistance, if you will.
Incidentally, according to some information that Paul developed in connection with the bill, an individual who was going outside for 3 or 4 months would still qualify under this bill, would qualify for the reduction that's available here. And I don't know if we want to take a look at that or not, because
I was just passing on to him what you and I talked about this morning, Gary, when I called you on the phone asking about figures and things like that.
Yeah.
The word domicile, I didn't know how that was worded in there, just how that would be worked.
Yeah.
I was just asking him what his ideas were.
You might want to comment on that further, Gary. Could a person be gone for 8 months under this bill?
Well, obviously, Mr. Chairman, it's going to be a factual situation, and when we get into a domicile issue, we get into a question of, it goes back in pure theory to where does the person in their mind look to as their permanent residence, and it's as tenuous as that in the law. And what we look at when we start trying to figure that out, when there is a domicile issue, is where do they have a permanent place of abode, permanent place of abode, or apparently their permanent place of abode. And basically, in normal circumstance, if we find somebody that has, where I get in a situation where they have two residences, one outside and one inside, we're going to have to look at what appears to be the actual permanent present. Is the one in Alaska just a cabin out somewhere? Is it a place that a person actually could live year-round? What is the nature of it? And this kind of a thing to try to make a determination of where the domicile is.
In that case, though, wouldn't voting residence be the final deciding criteria?
No, sir. We tax law is really independent of the voting situation. And you have the different requirements for voting as compared to fish and game licensing as compared to tax law. And we could make a determination that they were not domiciled in Alaska for tax purposes, and they still could actually technically meet the voting. I know we got into a situation recently where that in fact was the determination, that they were legally residents for voting purposes, but for tax purposes the individual was not. This is a situation where the people had left the United States and gone overseas. And so you have different laws coming into play, but we just would back up and look at the factual situation. The situation where, say, somebody's going out for a period of 3 months or so, but coming back and spending the majority of the year here, usually it's pretty clear and it's not an issue that we're going to challenge at all. It would only be if it were the reverse, that they were spending very little time in Alaska and the majority of the time out, that we probably would take a look at the facts to see if they're, in fact, we're still domiciled in Alaska.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may comment, again, based on Mr. Plotnick's information, I guess I was hoping that maybe he had a little more detailed information of which I could base some type of an estimate of which we were speaking. Again, the only thing I could really put together for you and for finance, if it goes to finance, would be a kind of a potential worst-case situation. But I would be the first to say that I'm, you know, I just know that that's not correct. And I couldn't even give you a good guesstimate as to how far it's going to vary.
Yeah, but at least you could say here's what could happen. Right now,
okay. Yes, sir. I definitely could do that.
It might be $100,000 or it might be $100 million.
Right.
And I think you probably could give us a figure a little bit closer than that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move this unanimous consent that we pass out to Senate Bill 41, I believe. Senate Bill 41 with the.
This is very tough.
Okay, with both of you.
We have a consent. Obviously, there's no objection. So ordered, okay. And I think what I will do is ask them for that this be waived.
Yeah, and then I get
okay, thank you very much.